Fest opens tomorrow. It's the 34th Irish Fest, and I think I've been to every single one of them. The person who came up with this idea way back in 1981, but it started in 1981. The Irish Fest debuted on the shores of Lake Michigan. It starts again tomorrow. And it's just, you know, you don't have to be Irish to enjoy this festival. There's so much to it. There are 100 acts on 16 stages. The group you're listening to right now, Ed Ward, will tell us about. I think this will be their first appearance at Irish Fest. And they're good, huh? Listen. Very nice. The place I always stop is where the dogs are, the wolfhounds and the terriers and... Yeah, I just love the dogs. There is food, there's a literary corner, an Irish language workshop, Celtic sports, theater, poetry, of course. And we're delighted to do our annual Irish Fest show. Ed Ward, the founder of Irish Fest, is joining us in our studios here in Milwaukee. And Ed had the idea, I think, of Irish Fest. I've never heard this story, but we'll ask him about it. And he is an performer himself. Blarney played for years and years, and they still do. It just keeps going on and on for, I think, 37 years. He is with us in our studios here in Milwaukee. Ed, great to see you.
Great to be here.
Came dressed appropriately.
Good to see you again.
I like this music. Who's playing?
I figured you'd like this.
Yeah,
one.
I do. Who is it?
This is Socks in the Frying Pan. It's a three-person ensemble of young fellows that are from Ireland, and it's their first trip over here to visit us this year. They're really fun. They're really good entertainers, and the music is great, too.
Yeah, very nice. Barry Stapleton is also with us in our studios, director of the Ward Music Archives, which I knew it was a big thing, but I had no idea how big it is. It is the largest archives in North American collecting and preserving recordings and memorabilia of our Irish musical heritage, and they disseminate the stories of our collections through exhibits, through programming. Barry was the manager of the Irish Cultural and Heritage Center, and you just won a big award, didn't you, last month for the operation?
Yeah, we did. We just won a national award for our new Irish sheet music site. So we're going to go up to Minnesota to accept that award in September. So it's a vindication of all the work we put on it. You can go to that website and look at 6,000 pieces of Irish sheet music. And if it's pre-1923 in a public domain, you can download it and sing it and look at it. And there's just great stories there about our musical legacy. So we're really happy that we won that award, and it vindicates all the work we put into it.
If you ever wondered if the Irish were musical, 6,000 pieces of sheet music would indicate that they're very musical. A little bit later, we will be adding to our conversation a historian who grew up in Milwaukee, actually, and lives now, will be joining us from Belfast, Northern Ireland. He is a fiddle player and a historian, author of Traditional Music and Irish Society. Martin Dowling will be joining us by phone from Belfast. All right, let's hear the story. I've never heard this story, Ed.
I thought you would probably know it
by
now.
No, I don't. When did you decide you were going to do this?
I was a volunteer at Summerfest in the days where they didn't have a big paid staff, and I used to sit right at the front desk because people came in. I did that for about 3 years. Rod Lancer was the director at the time. So people come in and said, I need this and this, that. I need to see this. I need to talk to so-and-so. So I was really interested in the back office operations. And we were very close to Festa Italiana people at that time, and a bunch of the Irish Fest people in the Irish community were working when Festa started in 1979. And it was in July 1980, we were standing at Festa. I was with a group of people, and I don't even know who it was, but somebody said, you know, Irish ought to put on a festival like this. And I said, you're right. You know, I think they should. And someone said, well, why don't you do it?
Do
and
it,
I said,
Ed.
All right, I will. But I remember going home that night, and my roommate, John Sheely, I said, you know, I went home that night, and I said, we're going to start an Irish Fest. And so John Maher and Bernie McCart and I, who were both playing in Blarney at the time, or had played in Blarney, John had. That was how it started. But, interesting, because a lot of the people that were originally working on the festival were involved in community activities, political campaigns. A lot of them were volunteers and community activists. So we had a really great group, a core group of people that helped organize it.
The thing that was amazing to me is that it was up and running in a matter of seconds. You had your first festival, and it was wildly successful. And then every festival since then, it's become, pretty early on, I think it became the largest Irish music festival in the country.
Well, yeah, actually, because the first year, we had to back into what our attendance was because they didn't have turnstiles at Summerfest at the time.
Oh.
But when we figured we had around 40,000 people. And now, if you would put that in the scale of any festival that exists today, it would probably be in the top three or four festivals still.
Mm.
Because there's only maybe four or five that are larger than us that actually are paid admission festivals. So it was quite an undertaking, and if we knew what we were doing back then, obviously you're right. Things went well. The first year we had gorgeous weather, and everybody, we were able to motivate people to get on the bus with us, and basically they were with us on our core mission and have been ever since.
Yeah. You know what I got to do years ago, and I haven't since because I don't think it happens anymore, is judge the baking contest. Oh, my gosh, I love that job so much. I got to eat all this Irish soda bread and then give one of the breads an award.
Well, we will certainly pass that message on.
You will?
You betcha we will.
Ed. Thank you. And it's really developed, too. Barry, tell us about the collection that you have. It's not just Irish Fest. We have year-long activities now and a real substantial Irish cultural effort going on in the city of Milwaukee all year long.
Right. I mean, that's one of the focuses of Irish Fest these days, as more than a festival. And because of the success of the festival, like Ed was saying, all the talent that we had involved, really, it's an educated bunch, that culturally, and it seemed kind of silly just to use it once a year. And so we're trying to use all that talent, to bring in artists, craftspeople, educational components into our center and around the city. So we're working, with a lot of different partners around the city to do events. We have a concert coming up in September, so there's lots of different activities going on. We're expanding at the festival with cooking this year. We have a new cooking area. So we're just really trying to build those relationships throughout the city and the region, actually, with all the people that we have involved in the
festival. Well, now, maybe it's a myth, and you can tell me if it's just a myth, but there will be a lot of people who heard what you just said, an Irish cooking area?
Yes, yes.
Oh, the Irish aren't known for their cooking,
If you went to Ireland in the 1960s or 70s, I'd say you're right. Yeah. But a whole different ballgame today. In fact, you'll see many shows on PBS, on cooking shows. And we have on the north end of the grounds, Ed, do you have the actual?
Yeah, Donna Gregson's going to be here, and she's going to be, she's from the Bunratty Cookery School. She started it about 5 years ago. But she's very well known on the west coast of Ireland, and she's going to dispel any notions that the food in Ireland is not good, because and Barry's right. When my first trip over there, I was desperately looking for a decent meal, but it's changed. I mean, some of the finest fish and beef restaurants over there are equal to anything that we have over here.
They're like Wisconsin. They're a dairy, very very much of a dairy agriculture state. Kerrygold's, big corporation right in Beloit here, there's a lot of connections there. So I think that's something that we want to push a little bit more.
Right. Yeah. So tell me about this process, because I've always wondered how it happens. People in Ireland, if you're a musician or a poet or a cook, perhaps, you have to know about Irish Fest in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Do you just go around the country and go into various places and listen to music and say, hey, do you want to come to Milwaukee for this Irish Fest? Or how do you get the talent?
There's a lot of different ways that we access talent. We are out on the road a lot. We make visits to Canada, UK, Scotland, Ireland. Our cultural people are in contact with people in Ireland, authors, genealogists, archaeologists, many of whom are coming this weekend. But the reputation of the festival is such in Ireland now that a lot of people know about us, and there's a lot of people coming to us. We rely on other people that have been here. We always try to invite new people who have never been experienced Irish Fest. And the word of mouth is probably one of the best things we have going for us, because everybody comes here and they're kind of blown away at the size of this event. So, but we're out there, Barry takes an exhibit on the road every year. How many festivals do you,
you
go to this
really?
Year?
Yeah,
oh.
So that's with the archives. And so usually it's a musical component. This year we kind of went the way of sports. So this year it's the Irish in baseball and it's the Irish in boxing. And the interesting thing about those two sports is their growth coincided with the Irish immigration. And so early baseball, about 30% of the major league players were Irish. You know,
really?
Mm-hmm,
back I
in
didn't
eight.
Know that.
So the immigration came 1840s, 1850s. Baseball took off 1860s, 1870s. So, and it was the same thing with boxing. So, so there's great connections there, great old stories, and we'll have a full exhibit there. And I'll take that around the country. I've been to I've been to New York and to Dublin, Ohio. We'll go to Kansas City, Muskegon. So we get to these festivals, show the exhibits, and then I get to see all the regional bands and everything else that they're doing, and we hire those people to come to Milwaukee.
Oh,
so,
nice.
So it's really a great great way for us to get out there with our mission with the archives, and then secondly to see other talent that's out there.
Yeah, can you set it up over at Miller Park too, so we could see it there?
If you can get me in there, I've actually contacted them for next year. I couldn't do it this year because we got it on the road, but next year it'll be available. So I'd love to have it up there.
We have contacts.
Yeah.
In fact, if anybody has baseball contacts, I got them right here. The household of baseball contacts.
Cool.
Yeah. So we'll try.
Well, come down and see it at the festival, and you'll see.
Oh, by all means, by all means, I will. Well, we want to play some music, and I know that you feature different parts of Ireland, or you feature people from Canada. This year it's Scotland, and KP has become wild about this band. He's been listening to them the last couple of days, and I haven't never heard them either, but it's the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
You've
Pipers.
Never seen them?
I've never seen them.
Oh, my goodness.
I think they're past my bedtime.
Oh. Well, they're worth staying up for, believe me. Yeah. Believe me.
Okay, all right. I believe you.
And they're making a DVD on the grounds this year.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
All right. So can you tell me about them? They're from Scotland.
Yeah. And they're all a lot of, I mean, they're some of the top Highland pipers and drummers that have gone through the Scotland Music Academy, and they're really hot on the circuit right now. It's very different kind of a show, and it's extremely entertaining, and they're going to be making a DVD, so they've got lots of bells and whistles this year.
All right, well, listen, this is a cover of a song that many of you are familiar with, I'm sure. Red Hot Chili Peppers, Scotland being featured this year, and they will be performing at Irish Fest. Are there certain things that, this isn't fair to ask because you'll say everything, but I'm wondering if there are, you talked about this group early on, which I'll be sure and see. Are there other people who are here for the first time or who you think are so superb that you simply must see them when you're at Irish Fest? Barry?
Yeah, we have, there's a lot of new bands coming. It's all a matter of your taste. Some people like the Celtic rock.
Mm-hmm.
We have traditional music. A lot of people like the ballad singers. And so, and there's a lot of new stuff out there. New stuff this year is the Moxie Strings, a regional band from Michigan, three-piece. Step Crew is a great production for those that like dance. These are the Cara Butler from Riverdance, Gene Palatsky and his brother from played with the Chieftains for years. Mm. So it's a dance production. They have a band behind them. They do all sorts of different dance, Irish, Canadian and Acadian dancing. Searson is a high-energy fiddling group from Canada. Grania Holland is an Irish folk singer who's singing the Gaelic tradition. And then all the traditional stuff. And then we have just legends coming in.
Yeah.
Andy Irvin and Donna Lunny, Liz Carroll, a top fiddle player in the world. So there's variety for everybody. There's big stages, kind of crazy big stages. Let's have a lot of fun here. Then there's just the exquisite stuff. We have a harp stage where people can just sit and listen to the harp. You know, sometimes the festival gets a little big down there, and so people need to, you know, chill themselves a little bit. And the harp stage and the Celtic root stage are just perfect for that, to sit and listen and really absorb some exquisite music.
Mm-hmm. There's Scotland's top singer-songwriter, a fellow by the name of Dougie McLean, is coming. And a lot of people will recognize his songs, even though they don't recognize his name. Caledonia would be one. Mm. People, if they hear it, would probably say, oh, I've heard that song before. Mm-hmm. So there's just such a variety of talent, and big stage, small stage, intimate, large crowds. And some of our favorites, Gaelic Storm will be back, Scythian will be back, the High Kings are back. The Willis Clan just was a semifinalist in the America's Got Talent.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so they're going to be all 12 of the family.
They're fabulous.
They're just wonderful. And such a wonderful family act. So a lot of the fan favorites and a lot of new things. And in addition to the music, we've got, four counties that are celebrating the 1,000th anniversary of the Battle of Clontarf, the millennium of the Battle of the Clontarf, when Brian Boru, Dalcassian, became the ruler of a unified Ireland. And he died in the battle, but it was a very momentous event in Irish history. And four counties in Ireland are working with us to celebrate it by sending us historians and archaeologists and genealogists and a cook. And so there's lots.
24 people coming
in
from Ireland.
Terrific.
Yeah, from the different counties. It's, Armagh, Dublin, Clare,
Tipperary.
And Tipperary that we worked with to put this project together. So there'll be a lot of Irish accents on the grounds this year, as well as Scottish.
You know. Yeah. The wonderful thing is that when you turn a corner, you're always just so delightfully surprised, and particularly with music. You may not, you're just wandering around, and all of a sudden, you hear this extraordinary musician, and you get waylaid because they're so good, and you don't really know who they are, but here they are, and you're there.
Some of them are right from Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Because 34 years later, some of the musicians we have in town and in this region are just as good as anybody you're going to find in Ireland. They're really exceptionally good. And all of our youngsters that have grown up with the music, it's just fantastic.
Yeah. Well, we're going to play a little bit of music. We have to take a pause for a moment. And you mentioned Gaelic Storm. I know that they're huge, that a lot of people attend. And they're a rocking group. They got a lot of energy.
Yeah, their 15th year here this year. We were the first
15th year.
We were the first festival to book them. After the movie The Titanic came out.
After the Titanic sunk. Huh? Mm-hmm.
Then we after the
them.
Titanic sunk.
We booked them,
Wasn't that long.
Thank God they survived that. Thank God they survived that movie. But they're great. They've done a great job with their band. They're a good template for how to make a band successful. They're really good people.
Yeah, we'll hear a little bit of them. We're also going to welcome phone calls. For those of you who have been to Irish Fest, we'll also give you, because everybody's looking for a good deal, ways to get in that will benefit other human beings, and we'll get you a better price, if not free admission to Irish Fest. Welcoming your phone calls, I know some of you, like me, have been there for 34 years, 33. This will be the 34th Irish Fest. Any questions you have, or you can share your experiences, we would love to hear from you. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also going to meet here in just a moment a fiddler who actually grew up in Milwaukee, Martin Dowling. He's a historian, educated at Madison and the University of Chicago, and author of traditional Irish music and Irish society. He'll be joining us by phone from Belfast. He hasn't crossed the pond yet. He will do so soon. So to you, to music, a little bit of Gaelic Storm, and they're a big group there. Here they are.
Raggle-taggle gypsy, oh, we'll raggle-taggle here, we'll raggle-taggle there, raggle up and down, taggle everywhere. From the north, from the south, from the east to the west, where the sky is a roof and the road is a rest, no one say yes, no one say no, run free with the raggle-taggle gypsy, oh.
like me, I'll be singing to the gate. I'll be picking on the corner, we'll have come to take your daughter, don't you say it, it'll warn you. Bringing you a fiddle, I'll be singing you a song. We'll fiddle, sing, sing, fiddle all day long. In the halls and the walls, they will hear us sing and say, oh, back for the diddle, diddle, die, diddle day. Come on away, away.
We're talking about Irish Fest, 34th year. It opens tomorrow on the Summerfest grounds. And welcoming your phone calls, too. If you've been, please, if you have any questions about this year's entertainment, feel free to give us a call. Our number is 800-486-8655. We'll meet Martin Dolling in a minute, but Ed, I wanted to give this to you. Bob on Facebook says he likes taking the opportunities made available to get in for free. Who doesn't? That way he can spend more on food. So what can you do?
Well, Thursday, we have a preview night on Thursday where we preview a lot of the new bands that you can get in from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. We call it the Grand Hooli. You get free admission with a donation of school supplies for children served by the Hope House in Milwaukee. On Friday, we have our $5 Friday, and that runs from 4 to 5:30. You can get in for $5. And kids under 12 are free, and then the regular admission price after 5:30 is $17 for adults. And then Saturday we run noon to midnight, and then Sunday we open the gates at 8 o'clock, and anybody donating a non-perishable food item by 11 a.m. will receive free admission to the festival. So you can get all this information on our website, www.irishfest.com. Get a list of the entertainers, all the activities. You have the times and dates and when to get in free, all of the special things that are going on, a little bit of hot news that we put up every day. But anything, any questions you have should be answered on the website. We've got an FAQ. And if you can't get an answer to a question you have, you can always call the Irish Fest office.
Yeah. And we haven't talked about the dogs. I know it's a little part of the festival, but I must tell you, I love dogs. And every year it's the absolutely, I'm meeting friends. They say, where do we meet? The dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The dogs. They have Irish Terriers and the big wolfhounds.
Do we have all 11...
Yeah, there were. I don't know that every year we've had, but I know some years we've had all. It's 11 breeds, isn't it?
Yeah, 11. Like
11.
I think
breeds.
11 breeds of Irish dogs. And I'm not an expert.
Yeah, but obviously, Ed, you have to get one.
Obviously, the wolfhounds are the big attraction because you don't see them in public that often. So I mean, when a kid sees a basically the horse,
very gentle,
but they're very gentle, and there's always kids jumping on them, and they seem to manage okay, and it's almost like giving pony rides around with these big.
Any festival that's going to have a dog exhibit, it's tops in my book.
Yeah.
It's just a really good thing to do, and I thank you for doing that.
It's a big attraction, and we have the tug of war. We have sports activities.
Right.
This year we're introducing Quizmaster. We're working with Quizmaster in town here to run trivia contests on the grounds. That's new.
Yeah.
And we have a dance pavilion where you can learn how to do
social
an Irish dance. And so we have lots of other activities if you're just not, baking contest that you referred to. We have a freckle contest for the kids out on the pond. We've got cork races. So there's a lot of different activities going on all weekend long.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go to Belfast here in just a moment. The author of Traditional Music in Irish Society, A Historical Perspective, is with us, Martin Dowling. He is teaching he's a lecturer in Irish traditional music at Queen's University of Belfast. He's a fiddle player and an historian who grew up in Milwaukee, actually. I didn't know that until Ed told us. He's educated at the University of Chicago and also at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. By means of introduction, though, we should do it because this is a celebration of Irish music and the spoken word. We should do it through hearing him play his fiddle. This is Martin Dolling performing. Martin Dowling is joining us now, as I said, by phone from Belfast. Martin, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so excited to talk. It's great to hear Ed and Barry talking about the early days of the Irish Fest.
Yeah, well, they're here in the studios,
so
and they'll
Martin.
Be talking
Hi,
to
guys.
You, too.
I know, Martin.
Yeah. I didn't know, Martin, you grew up in Milwaukee.
Yeah, no. Do you want to hear some more history? I mean, I remember when Ed and John Maher came to my, you know, Ed would have met, I think Ed might have still been in law school when he met my parents and found out that I played the fiddle. I was just a young pup, maybe a teenager anyway. I remember them coming when they were forming Blarney, just coming by the house, and we played a few tunes. I was a bit young for Blarney at the time, so I didn't make that team. But it all went on from there. You know, that first Irish Fest in 1981 that Ed was talking about, that was a huge weekend for me, really a transformative weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The fiddle players I heard... And I saw for the first time.
Sure, yeah, that's
that weekend,
right.
Kevin Burke and Frankie Gavin and
Mick Mahoney
and Carol playing. I'd seen her a few times, but playing with the Greenfields of America just blew me away and changed my life. Really, I started to get really committed to playing the fiddle and studying about Irish history and culture after that.
So you're saying that Ed Ward really determined the direction of your life?
Yeah,
he did, though.
Hey, congrats on the new book.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in Belfast right now. When are you coming over?
My bags are packed. I'm really excited. You know, we're going to get some shut-eye here and get up early in the morning, and an Aer Lingus flight will get us into O'Hare tomorrow afternoon. So I should be there for the Hooli tomorrow night. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's late at night, I know, 9 o'clock in Belfast right now.
Yeah.
All right, let's ask some questions, because we associate, of course, Ireland with music, and it's incredibly rich. And if you go to Irish Fest, you'll know what we're talking about, musical history. Has it always been so? Have instruments, music always been important if you go way back in Irish history, Martin?
It seems to have been always important, yeah. Whether it's always been, you know, peculiarly important, more than any other nation in the world or any culture of the world, is another difficult question. I guess one of the things that I was concerned about when I was researching for my book was, you know, how old is what we know as Irish traditional music? I mean, how old is it? When did it all get going? Is it all really a continuous thing right the way back to the early harpers of the medieval period? What were the big changes that happened over the centuries? And, you know, my conclusion is that it's not something that's sort of stuck or caught in time, but there were phases of history where it really changed quite rapidly and became what it is, you know, fairly quickly over a course of a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm. When we think about Ireland, of course, we think about history and we think of oppression and we think of movements and revolutions, too. At what point did that start entering the music of Irish Fest? And, Ed, I know that you do a lot of traditional Irish music, too. How prevalent do you find that in the songs that Blarney does? Martin, let's start with you.
Well, there's always been, there has been for many centuries, a tradition of social commentary, mm-hmm. you know, and political commentary
mm-hmm.
Embedded in the song tradition. The singers, the ballad makers, and the ballad sellers, way back to the 18th century and earlier, were really, they were like yourself, Kathleen. They were the transmitters of news, and they were the commentators on the state of politics and the state of the world at the time. Before there were newspapers, obviously before there were any other kinds of media, singers on the street, you know, transmitted these messages in their songs.
Hmm. And Ed, you've sing all kinds, and we'll ask you this as well, Barry. There are so many songs about history in Irish music.
Well, I think songs are basically a record, basically a musical recording of history. The whole thing about the archives, everything we have, we have songs from the, what's our
1700s,
late 1700s,
really?
All the way up to the...
Wow.
But they're basically a history of the times, a history of all major events, social trends, politics. It's always been that way with songs. And in Irish, it was a strong oral tradition, as Martin said, where the bards would travel the country with their music, their harps, their poetry. And that continues today in a different format.
But, and some of it was direct, like if you take the Wolf Tones music, it's very direct rebel music.
Mm-hmm.
And other was set... to poetry that they didn't want to be direct, of course, because they, you know, it was illegal to say some of the things that they were saying. So they set it to poetry. If you take like Tommy Makem's Four Green Fields or something like that, that's a current example of how an old song would have been written, talking about something, you know, where the words wouldn't be direct, but everybody knew what we were talking about, the fourth green field and everything. So it's very interesting, a ballad legacy.
Mm-hmm. And what about the fiddle, Martin? You play the fiddle, and it is so prominent in Irish music, and it's just, I'm always amazed that people can play it. It can be just make you so happy, and it can also just make you really sad at the same time. What? Why is it so prominent, Martin?
Well, it wasn't always so prominent.
Really?
And, you know, the Scots really developed fiddle playing before the Irish, and there was a huge influence of Scottish fiddle playing on Irish fiddle playing. It's hard to find if you go back to the 18th century. You know, to the early 18th century. Even before the Uilleann pipes were invented, there's fiddle playing in Ireland, and there are Italian violinists in Dublin. But it's hard to find those famous fiddle players from way back then. Even in the 19th century, they're few and far between. But it's something that the violin is naturally a very expressive instrument, like you say, very much like the human voice and the full range of emotion. So it's going to be incorporated sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. We wanted to play, because this is Irish Fest and because of all the music, this is a piece from Set It Up For Us. Michael Coleman, you say in your book, this is perhaps the most influential single recording in the history of Irish traditional music. We'll ask Barry to comment on this, too. What are we about to hear, and why is it so influential?
Are we about to hear the Tar Bolton and the Sailor's Bonnet?
Yeah. We sure can be.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
We are. we have it right here.
Well, let me say a couple of things about this track. I mean, if you start this first tune in a pub or at a gathering anywhere on the planet, Japan, Canada, anywhere, the next two tunes, everybody who's playing with you will know them and will play them with you. So it is the lingua franca, the set of tunes of Irish music, as much as any other set of three tunes. But it's also interesting because it really set a template for the modern kind of commercial recording of traditional music, which is still very much with us, this kind of idea that you put a couple or three tunes together, you make some nice key changes, you get a good guitar player to back you, and it makes for about 3 minutes of nice pop music, fits on one side of a 78 RPM recording, and it has survived for, almost a century now. Even after the LP came on and then the CD, and, now we download things online. But still, we like this sort of 3-4 minute track, and Coleman sort of, you know, he set the mold here, and this was also Michael Coleman. This is after the Depression in the early 1930s. The production values of the recording technology had gone up, and Coleman himself had really figured out what to do with these 78 RPM sides and what to do when he went into the studio, so it's a real gem.
Okay, and we'll hear about a minute of it. We are celebrating Irish Fest this hour of the program. Hard to believe it enters its 34th year tomorrow on the Summerfest grounds here in Milwaukee. It's an absolutely, you know, I'm Irish, and so I might be interested in Irish fest. But even if you aren't Irish, I go with friends every year who are, you know, they're Belgian and they're Russian, and everybody loves this festival.
It has a great feel. It's very uplifting. It's very welcoming. My non-Irish fans always say that, too. I mean, it's just it has a great feel to it, and that's what you want. We go around across, like we said, the country to many festivals, and it's not always who you book or you know, who you have or what you have going on. It's the feel of that festival.
Yeah.
And that's very important. And we're just blessed with our volunteers that really get into it. And we're in, you know, all the people in front, the staff and everything. We want to make that feel.
It's a family festival, really. I mean, we've won a lot of awards from Metro Parent for our children's activities, and that's really an important part. But these kids, when we started the festival in 1981, there was one dance school here.
There was only one then?
Yeah, I think we had maybe 40 dancers. I had tried it for about a year. And
you did?
Yeah. I did.
You were good?
I moved
and then
on.
Kit Nash kicked you out,
I went
right?
to the dark side of the promoting of Irish music. You know. Anyway, so now we have, what, seven dance schools. And 4,000 young people that are actually dancing in Milwaukee. And the same thing has happened with music and genealogy and some of our theater groups. So it's just blossomed and into so many wonderful things. And I wanted to say one thing that that people don't know, but we have 26 different brands of beers this year. We have a special drink called the Mighty Quinn that has a little Jameson in it. You're going to be able to find that. We have a Jameson tasting area. An Irish sports bar that we set up last year that's gaining a little momentum. So there's lots of different little things as you walk around the grounds you're going to be finding that you're surprised to see.
Exactly.
People walking around in the cultural area, you'll find people that are dressed in personas of historical characters and actually know and play the role of Irish historical characters. But little things like that that just add a little bit of a Irish touch to it that people enjoy.
Yeah, they do. Sonny is calling in from Little Suamico. Hi, Sonny.
Hello there.
Hi.
I have an Irish fest story.
Great.
I was one at the earlier Irish fest about 30 years ago with a friend, and my paternal grandmother was Irish. And while I didn't know her well, my mother was always telling us how, you know, we're Irish and we're Orange Irish, and kind of alluded. She's insinuated that we might be lace curtain Irish, so you know, we're Irish, and although I'm mostly German. But anyway, I go to Irish Fest, and I was looking through all the booths for our family coat of arms. I couldn't find it, and I finally went to this one booth, and the fella says, well, you're not going to find that here at Irish Fest. And I said, why not? He said, because Ferguson is Scottish. And I thought, oh, my gosh, when he said it, it made perfect sense. Of course Ferguson is Scottish. And then he says, the Clan Ferguson were run out of Ireland into Scotland along with the Kennedys, the Nixons, and the Reagans.
Ah.
And when I called my father and told him that, he laughed and said, perhaps you shouldn't tell too many people about that.
Oh, no. Hey, one thing that you might be interested in, because this year, because of our Scotland focus, we have the St. Andrews Society is going to be there with a booth, and so is Bob McWilliam, who is an expert on tartan tree and Scottish families. And he's going to be there in a booth all weekend. And he's a font of wonderful knowledge about Scottish names and tartans. So,
and there is a lot of Irish-Scottish connections.
Yeah, there is.
We all have that in our family histories.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty common.
Yep.
So this is the year for you to go, Sonny.
It must be. I might have to go down there and once again search for Clan Ferguson.
Well, Fergie. Remember, Fergie's kind of put you on the map there, hasn't she? You know?
And if you want to join us, we do have time to take a few more phone calls, 800-486-8655. Martin is still with us. Barry, do you have anything that you want to contribute to what he had to say about the history of Irish music?
Yeah, I mean, what he said obviously is correct. I mean, Michael Coleman is one of the seminal people in Irish music history. I think what he said about the settings and the key changes are you know, to me, that's the sign of a great band. When I hear about, I don't know, maybe six, 7 years ago, we had a band here called Fluke, and two flutes, boron, and so you look at it on a paper and you think, well, you know, how dynamic can that be? Can we put them on a big stage? But it was their arrangements, their settings of these tunes that was just unbelievable. And now we have We Banjo 3 coming in this year that mixes bluegrass with these tunes and almost gives it a rock and roll attitude, you know. So it's the settings, the arrangements to me that are almost everything. You know, pretty much everybody knows the tunes, and there's still, you know, new tunes being written. Liz Carroll has written tunes, and those are great too. But I think that, like he said, these, and going back to what he said about the 3 to 4 minutes, that also goes back to the cylinder. The original recordings could only hold 2 minutes, and then they had 3 minute cylinders. So whatever you were doing, classical music and everything had to be downsized to 2 minutes or 3 minutes, or it had a 4 minute cylinder. So that's why even today, Beatles and everything else is between 2 and 4 minutes is the old cylinder recordings. You know, so that's part of that because traditional music can go on forever. You know, mm-hmm. but so that's one of the reasons.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And Ed, we haven't talked to you about your music at all. When you started Blarney and the kind of music you did, and Blarney's still around.
Yeah, well, my brother passed away in 2010, and I left the band in 1990. But I started the band in 1975 with a law school roommate, Bernie McCartan and John Maher, and then we added, John had left, and we brought Kevin Stapleton on, John Teston. We played for 15 years, and we recorded 3 albums, and over the course of time, the other guys left, and I stayed, and then Chuck and Dennis and Kevin carried on for a number of years, and Dennis and Kevin are still singing as Blarney, and you know,
they'll be there
still
Friday and Sunday.
Great. Yep.
Yeah, but we were more. I grew up in a family that did a little, you know, the little hoolie in the living room thing where you were supposed to get up and recite a poem or sing a song and do
you?
A dance. So we had a very musical family on my father's side, and the tradition was there, and my dad loved the music, and so we that kind of was the genesis of my interest in it. And but the band started in 1975, and then I left about 15 years later. But I enjoyed all of it, you know, the 15 years that we traveled and we sang and recorded. It was wonderful. And there's a big joke going around that we actually started Irish Fest in 1981, so we'd have a place to play in the third week in August, you know.
Why not? It's okay.
Yeah, sure, why not?
That's a good story. Martin, how about you? Are there groups that you particularly want to hear when you arrive here?
Well, the thing... Always for me, down the years, I mean, I performed at Irish Fest,
yes.
I think, for the first 22.
Yep. Oh, you did? My goodness.
Yep.
In various scenarios, most of them with my wife, Christine, flute player and singer, and our band, Boxty, in Madison. Before that, my band from University of Chicago, Saura Music. And after that, a trio with Dahi Sproul, the guitarist. But the thing about Irish Fest is it's just so big that there's room for so much. There's room for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the big stages, really, they demand, you know, a certain type of performance and a certain type of scale of performance. And it's wonderful to hear all the bands that provide that. But I have migrated, I guess, or drifted to the quieter corners of the grounds over the years to hear duets and solo players, solo singers. Mm-hmm. That's really where I'm going. You know, I was talking about setting molds and templates. Really, back in the mid-1970s, early 80s, bands like the Botti Band and Planxty, they kind of set this template in place, which is very much the recipe for providing a very large audience with a great experience. But I've been drawn to, you know, more solo playing, and I've been working with some of my colleagues and students here in Belfast on some projects that emphasize improvisation and, you know, a little bit more space and silence in the music.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to, Sonny, thanks for your call. Let's go to Bob in Redmond. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say thank you. I have absolutely nothing to do with being Irish. But in the late 90s and early 2000s, I was welcome member of the Curragh Club, and I want to say thank you to them. We wrote at Irish Fest, and I live somewhere else, but I just want to say thank you that I got to be a part of that. And every year when I hear about Irish Fest, it reminds me it was a bad time for me, but they were very kind and welcoming, and I just wanted to say thank you, and especially to the Hamill family of Wauwatosa. So.
Nice, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Will there be races, Curragh races, this year, too?
Yes. I think Saturday and Sunday are the main days for the races in the lagoon. So you can stand around the lakefront and see that. They go out into the lake a little bit, but it's pretty much in the lagoon area.
Right.
And so they have contests, and I don't know if they welcome other people on, but it's usually they have bring teams in from Pittsburgh or somewhere. I don't know where they're coming in from this year.
I think five or six different cities have Curragh teams now. And they bring them from around the country, and they compete with one another. And then we have some local teams that compete as well. It's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aren't you glad you started all of this, Ed? Look at what it's become. And it's in Milwaukee. You know, it's in this city.
Yeah, of course I'm glad. I mean,
I'm glad, too.
We're all glad. Thank you, Ed.
But we had so many wonderful and talented and creative people that got on board the bus all along the way. And the nice thing about Irish Fest is we've got a cadre of young people that are stepping in and taking responsibility and have a vision and have bought into it. And I think our future is in good hands as some of the early organizers, get up there in years, and you got to pass the torch. You got to, you got to get the young people involved, and I think we've done a good job at that.
Absolutely, you have. Mm-hmm. Wonderful job at that. And we should also emphasize, because it's another big part of this, we've mentioned a little bit about the historical exhibits. There's poetry being recited. Casey at the Bat will be part of the baseball, Irish baseball celebration, the genealogy, theater. There are all these. The spoken word is just as important to Irish history as the musical sound, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a head school there, and there's a lot of stuff going on in the head school. The Gael talked, so you can go there and speak the Irish language for a while. There'll be people singing in Gaelic. You can walk through the exhibits in the cultural area, the Brian Brew exhibits there. Genealogy, as Ed mentioned. So there's,
Literary Corner. Martin's going to be signing his books
in
the Literary Corner.
Right.
This is Martin's first book, so we've got a number of new authors that are coming in every year. That literary tradition is also a very important tradition.
Absolutely. Martin, we'll look forward to you being here, and thank you so much.
I'm really excited. Yeah, it's an honor to be back.
Yeah, thanks so much. Ed, Matt on email says this is really nice. Thanks to Ed and the Milwaukee crew. Because of them, several other Irish Fests have started throughout the country, including Oshkosh Irish Fest up the road. Everyone who enjoys Irish and Celtic music owes Pope Ed a huge thank you. For those of us who drink the water must always remember the man who dug the well.
Oh, that's interesting. That's
Matt Miller.
Very kind. Yeah, we are known around the country as the mother of all Irish festivals, just because so many other festivals have come here to learn what we've done, and we're also out there stealing ideas back from them as well. But we have a wonderful group of sister festivals that we work with, that's been a nice development, to meet all these people. We're all motivated by the same thing, to promote the Irish and Irish-American culture and leave a living legacy in the bloodstream of our youth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you both so much. Here's to sunny skies. Or if it's a shower, just for a few minutes, which I'm sure will happen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Barry Stapleton and Ed Ward. Ed founded Irish Fest back in 1981, the first Irish Fest. This is the group that will be featured from Scotland this year. We started with them, and we will end this show. These are the Red Hot Chili Pipers from Scotland. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production in Milwaukee. Irish Fest starts tomorrow. What's the website again, Ed?
www.irishfest.com.
Great. And there's a link on our Facebook page. Join us for tomorrow's programs. Thanks for listening today.